Douglas Hinkle was a middle-aged college professor of Romance languages and literature when he shifted to police work. He's walked a beat and ridden in a patrol car, but his specialty is forensic art. An account of his police work is described in his new book called Faces of Crime. Armed with pencils, sketch pads, and plenty of erasers, he spent hours listening to witnesses or victims of crime while he draws. He shuns computers and composite books and relies on the basic tools of the sketch artist. The movies and TV cop shows often portray the police sketch as the key to solving a crime. I asked Douglas Hinkle if this, in fact, is what goes on down at the station.
What much more frequently happens is that the drawing in the first place is not accurate because the description is not accurate, and then it gets pinned to the bulletin board and eventually gets covered up with thank you notes and things of that nature, you know.
Why wouldn't a description be accurate? What would go on for a witness that that he or she couldn't remember what had happened?
Well, first of all, a victim of violence, if the witness happens to be the victim and not a passerby or some other person, he is likely to be traumatized for a wide variety of reasons. And in the meantime, what happens to your vision is that you look at the point of threat. Consequently, you're not looking at the face. It is just an indistinct blur. Then the policeman asks you to describe it, and you say, well, gee whiz, he had an average face, you know. Well, what's an average face? So sometimes this is very, very frustrating for the investigator because he has to spend a lot of time very patiently seeking out details until he gets a description that's worthwhile using. And in many cases, it's just simply not worthwhile using.
So say somebody comes to you and has been the victim of a holdup in the street and can give you a precise identification of, say, the kind of weapon that was used, but gets then fuzzy sort of on the description. How do you draw this person out to try to recall the detail?
What I generally do is to try to spend some time talking with the victim, calming him or her down, getting to know something about the particular individual, getting them to talk about subjects that are close to their heart, their children, the local school, whatever it happens to be, their pets. And when they have calmed down sufficiently, I start in a very structured system of questions which are intended to elicit a description. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What I try to do is to work from the general to the specific. I'll start with the shape of the head, and I'll give them a chart of a dozen or so head shapes to take a look at and study, and ask them simply to tell me which one reminds them most closely of the shape of the head and face of the offender. Once I have that down, and this doesn't happen instantaneously, once that has happened, once I've got it down, I will then go to other generalities, usually having to do with what I call the negative spaces on the face. That is, the distances between features.
For instance, the eyes, how far apart they are?
Precisely, yes. I generally identify five major negative spaces. The space from the hairline to the eyebrows, which is the least reliable of all because of hairdos, what have you, unless it's completely visible. Then the space between the eyes, whether they are narrow, set close together, whether they're wide set, or whether they're more or less average. Then the space across the cheekbones, from the outside of one cheekbone to the outside of the other. In some people, this is quite broad, and when it is, it does tend to distort your perception of the distance between the eyes. Then, most important, perhaps, is that distance between the bottom of the nose and the top of the upper lip. We don't think of this as being particularly important, but if you don't get it right, you mess up your description altogether. I'll give you an example. Let's take President Reagan. He has Celtic heritage, and this distance is quite large. When he was running against Fritz Mondale, we noticed that Mr. Mondale's distance in there was quite short. What the cartoonists will do is to exaggerate each. They will show President Reagan with a distance that takes up most of his face between his nose and his upper lip. And with Mr. Mondale, we'll scrunch them up together to give him a nutcracker face.
This is great for identifying through caricature somebody quickly at a glance. How accurate are the descriptions that a witness would give to you of this identifying space from nose to lip?
Not very, unless you take it out of them by gradual questioning. Sometimes I'll have to do three or four side sketches on a separate piece of paper and ask them to help me adjust that distance until we get it right.
Sometimes I'm really startled to see the artist's conception of what a perpetrator looks like versus the against the photograph of the person once caught. And I think, how did anybody make the jump from the drawing to the real person?
Sometimes it's extremely difficult. On the other hand, sometimes it comes very easily. It depends on circumstances. I was riding patrol one night when we got a call of an... I was at home when I got a call that there had been an assault up at the police station. When I got there, I found that it was a murder. A young student had been walking by the courthouse when he was stabbed in the throat by a local tough who was trying to pick a fight. The boy bled to death very quickly. About 30 feet away, there was standing a very level-headed young graduate student who'd had a few beers, but he was still sober. And he said, "I think I can help you. I saw the whole thing go down." So he sat down, gave me a description. It took about an hour, hour and a half to put the thing on paper. I showed it to the chief of detectives and said, "Oh, I know him." He said, "That's John Salyers. Let's go get him." They actually got the guy within 2 to 3 hours after the murder, and the resemblance was almost photographic.
What's the most effective technique you've seen somebody use to disguise themselves, to sort of frustrate the artist's conception?
One of the cleverest I've run across involved the use of an orange Band-Aid beside the nose. It was in a bank holdup. Every teller in the place noticed the orange Band-Aid and wanted to describe it in great detail. The robber just simply tossed it onto the street as he sprinted down out the bank door, and it was found just a few yards from his exit. But it served as well as a ski mask would have served in that particular instance.
Was the robber ever caught?
Yes, he was caught, as a matter of fact.
But the
but that had nothing to do with the drawing.
So if somebody wanted to change their hair color or grow a beard or shave a mustache, these things would not be that effective in disguising someone? I mean, these...
Oftentimes not. Now, one of the things that I do as a public service, as a matter of fact, I train bank tellers in the area I happen to live. And one of the things I point out to them through a series of slides is that you can train yourself to look through facial hair and see what's underneath. And some of those slides I've taken from FBI wanted posters. A good example was Claude Dallas. You probably remember him. He's the one who shot a couple of game wardens out west and then was able to live off the land for a considerable period of time. The mugshot shows him clean-shaven on one side and with the beard on the other. And all you have to do is to take one look to realize that this beard really hides nothing. The man is immediately recognizable. So facial hair, I don't think is all that significant.
Facial identification seems to be one of the most basic way that human beings can identify one another. Yet there have been a number of studies done on the difficulties of interracial recognition. A Florida State University psychologist studied blacks and whites and found the problem affected each race about equally. Have you found this in your police work? And
absolutely. Absolutely. I have had many whites say to me, "All blacks look alike." I had blacks say to me, "All whites look alike."
What is going on here? And are you able to move beyond this in your interview with them to get information that's able to assist you?
Well, let's take that in order. Your first question was, what's going on here? And I think very probably the answer there is more in the realm of psychology than it is in the realm of forensic art, and I'd hesitate to try to answer that because I would be intruding on somebody else's territory. The other part of the question is, yes, you can say, "Now, hey, wait a minute, fella. Let's take a look at these two white men across the room. Do they look alike?" Well, no. Well, now, what are some of the differences? And then when you start pinpointing that, you get them to grin, and then they say, "Well, yes, maybe I do remember the shape of his head, or I do remember that he had an unusual nose, or I remember that he had a missing front tooth, or that his face was out of balance, or whatever it happens to be," you see. So I think once you get beyond that, I think it's something of a mental block. We hate to acknowledge it, of course, but it does exist. There's an awful lot of race prejudice around on both sides, and I think this is part of the this is part of the problem. People are not really willing to attempt to describe something that they stand either in awe of or in fear of.
Have computers or the ability to digitize images and to change them with a light pen on a screen and to call up banks of images made your work more kind of a skill and handcraft that's no longer needed?
No, it hasn't, as a matter of fact, because no matter whether you have the most skillful artist in the world or whether you have the most sophisticated computer, you are still locked into a couple of factors that are invariable. And chief among those is the witness's memory.
Do police carry around photographs of suspects?
Some police do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some police, as a matter of fact, keep a file of those inside their police hats.
So they've got it right at the top of their head. They can just
right.
sort of
exactly.
take it up and look at it.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in, Douglas Henkel. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Douglas Henkel, author of Faces of Crime, published by Peachtree.